Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a beautiful Tuesday afternoon here in the Allstate Showcase Studio along Michigan Avenue. Andrew Herman will be here from DNA Info. A little bit later, we talk about openings and closings. And, well, he's got a story about a Czech restaurant. There are a few restaurants, I guess, in Czechoslovakia, and they're expanding to the U.S., and they've chosen Chicago for the first restaurant. I think they'll be open by the end of the year. So we'll talk about that, and then about Chuck E. Cheese in the Chatham neighborhood, where they're worried about, they're worried about the angry parents. So that's coming up. Suzanne Muchen in the second half hour. But we usually start on Tuesdays with John Najarian. You see him on CNBC early in the day, or mid-morning, I should say, and then he often joins us as well. John, welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Loved your billboard, by the way. Saw it on the saw it on 57, I think, as I was going out to Midway today.
A billboard of what?
I think it said it had a picture of you, and it was talking about your radio program.
I had no idea that existed. I'm going to have to go for a ride this afternoon.
Well, you're a handsome fellow, so I can understand why.
That's my territory, too. I grew up down in Kankakee County. So, hey, well, let's start with oil, right? Is oil sort of driving the markets today, or what's up there?
A little bit, yes. It's certainly making the markets nervous, as any time oil slips 2 or 3%, it does tend to make the markets a little nervous, even if it's good for investors overall. With their spending, you know, and disposable income and so forth, even if it's good for airlines, even if it's good for transportation companies, nonetheless, it appears to be, Stephen, an oversupply rather than a lack of demand. And that's one of the reasons it's not really impacting us as much today, is just that straight out oversupply of crude oil rather than people are cutting back, not spending as much. That is not the case.
You just mentioned the airline or the airlines, and Boeing is at the Paris Air Show, and usually there are big deals announced for the airline industry at the Paris Air Show, and certainly was the case today. They are announcing they've got, I think, deals. They vary, right? There's like a hard deal, there are soft deals, but they announced deals for maybe 45 planes worth $5.4 billion coming up at list prices there. So how's Boeing doing today?
Well, Boeing made also that interesting announcement that it's basically going to shun or leave that four-jet market. The four jets being, of course, the last plane they produced that really has those is the 747. And they're saying that that's not really where the demand is for the A380 or Boeing's 747. Instead, it's for more or less stretched versions of the 737. And that's where a lot of their big demand, the Dreamliner, the 777, and that stretched 737 are where the demand is. So Boeing's up about 0.5% today. It hit a new 52-week high, which may be the highest level that Boeing has been at ever. I'm just doing a quick check. I believe it is, yes. As it topped 201 today, it was the highest that Boeing has ever been in the history that it's been a company.
Well, that's nice to hear for a nice little Chicago company across the river from us. The Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, is speaking, I think, while we're talking, he's addressing the National Association of Manufacturers to sort of not give, I think, very many details, but kind of a pep talk or restart talk when it comes to the effort for tax reform from the politicians in Washington. So, you know, you and I have talked about this before, where the market reacted in the beginning of the year about what might be coming. Not a lot of that has come. Some has with regulation. But how important is it for Wall Street, for the markets, to see some sort of tax reform done this year?
I think it would be really important to get the GDP jump started. Whether or not we want to believe the projections that the Republicans put out, that it could jump start the GDP to push it over 3, perhaps even to 4, is what their projections say, or whether we want to take a look at the Congressional Budget Office, which says it will have a short-term impact, but it might be to 2.5. We've been chugging along, Stephen, at 1.25, maybe 1.5. So either a jump to 2, 2.5, 3 would be fantastic. And that was the case that Secretary Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, made this morning when he was talking about having a bipartisan bill come before the House and Senate that gets passed and sent on to the president. He says the next time they present a bill, it will have support from both the Senate and House Republican and Democratic parties, and that that will sail through, in his opinion. But he's been saying that most of the year, and he had hoped that it would be passed by August. Now we'll see whether Secretary Ryan can get a little more support for the proposal that is obviously behind closed doors at this time.
Yeah, before you go, I want to ask you about Ford as well, because the president has made a lot about, you know, applauding companies who come back here or who build things here. And Ford had gotten the kudos from President Trump earlier this year. They announced today they're going to move production of the Ford Focus from the U.S. to China, and actually then from China would export Focus cars to be sold here in the U.S. Now, they say they will be exporting far more cars to China than importing from China. But that still is, I would imagine, something that's not going to sit well at the White House.
And you could be very right. The reason that I think it's a smart move.
You gave me Ford, you think they might. Yeah, go ahead.
I don't think he'll lash out at them for this because, quite frankly, in the United States right now, especially with the crude oil that you and I opened the conversation with and gasoline prices down, small cars just are not selling. And that's one of the reasons, of course, the Focus would be in focus to be a car that they'd manufacture in China and then import or re-import to the United States those vehicles, because there's just not the demand, Stephen, for those. There's, you know, the SUVs, trucks, are getting the lion's share of the demand right now, and or bigger vehicles, certainly not the small vehicles. And it doesn't matter who makes them, whether it's Fiat, Chrysler, even Toyota. They're not seeing the demand for the small cars in the United States the way they used to when prices were spiraling up.
All right. All that makes perfect sense from you, John Najarian. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it. We'll do it again next Tuesday.
Thank you, Stephen. Have a great one.
John Najarian. Follow him on Twitter, at John Najarian, or watch him on CNBC as well. It's 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here on a Tuesday afternoon. Andrew Herman is in the studio as well, an editor at DNA Info Chicago. And, well, Andrew, it's good to see you. Thanks
hey,
for coming
Steve.
By.
Good.
And so Andrew talks about openings and closings when it comes to things in the city. And, well, one of the ones, tell me about what's going on at Chuck E. Cheese in the Chatham neighborhood.
This is one of the stranger stories we've had.
Oh, wait a minute. I don't know if you can hear that. There's a train coming by. Oh, it's carrying a couple beers. Andrew Herman here. Take the Pilsner Urquell.
Okay.
What's the story about Czechoslovakia? And there's a restaurant there that delivers beer by train. And they're coming to Chicago?
Right. So this is a Prague restaurant called Vitopna. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it right. Probably I'm not.
I think that's actually a perfect pronunciation, believe it or not.
So it's a restaurant in Prague, and their hook is that they serve you food and drinks, and they are delivered by model trains. So you go into this restaurant, and there's these trains going around the restaurant. They say they serve about, on a good day, 1,500 drinks.
Wow.
And they say that they are looking to expand to the United States, and they pick Chicago.
I know here in Chicago there's the Two Toots restaurant where they deliver food by train, I think.
Yeah.
My
yeah.
buddy Dale Eisenberg.
I've heard of that.
Them.
Yeah. Yep.
So this will be competing with a cheeseburger coming around the bend?
Well, you know, I was looking at their menu online there, mostly pizza and pasta and beer, of course.
Yeah.
But also they have cabbage and sausage soup.
Well, of course they do.
Yummy. And schnitzel with mashed potatoes. But it looks like sort of like more like a kid's sort of place that'll serve the pasta.
Oh, is that right?
Pizza.
Okay.
But not the beer to the kids, obviously, but... That's another story.
It'd get more kids in the house.
Maybe, but it's a cute little place, and you see the trains going around the little mountains and through the bridges and over the little
and
ponds.
And so I just brought a group of listeners to Prague, and actually Brno, we stopped in Brno, where the restaurant started last year.
Yeah.
I knew it's a tourist thing there. I had not seen it.
Uh-huh.
Why did they choose Chicago to expand when it comes to the U.S.?
Well, it's interesting. So the owner says, well, it looks like there's some pretty healthy beer culture here in Chicago, which is true, and a lot of Germans for some reason. So I think he thinks that, You know, if you have some sort of German ancestry, as I do.
Yeah, I don't know.
You might like beer, as I do.
I don't know if the Czechs are all in favor of the Germans, though. When it seems like that mix doesn't always work.
Yeah, it's not like he says that's a great Czech place. Though, near western suburbs, I suppose, there'd be a lot of Czechs.
Back in Bohemia.
Yeah, that's right. Cicero and Berwyn.
So this place, what's it called again?
It's called, you're going to make me say it again, aren't
you? I really forgot.
Vitapna.
Okay, and they're going to call it that here as well.
Yeah, right.
One more time, what's it called?
I believe it's
Vitapna. And they hope to open up at the end of the year.
Right, no location yet, though.
Well, there might be one in Chatham.
Right.
So there's Chuck E. Cheese wants to open up in Chatham.
Yeah.
And the local alderman says, well, we don't want the trouble.
Well, here's the thing. So Chuck E. Cheese is a Texas-based company, 500 these entertainment centers. I don't know if you've ever been to one.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
Across the country. They're like arcades, and they have pizza, and they have the animatronic robots that sing to you, including Chuck E. Cheese, Big Mouse.
Everything but Tylenol, which is what's really needed.
Yeah, so kids' parties here. So they're thinking about opening one in Chatham at the Dan Ryan and 87th, and the neighbors are against it. The Concerned Citizens of Chatham neighborhood organization says that Chuck E. Cheese's draw troublemakers, and they point to one in Oak Lawn where evidently there's been a number of fist fights.
They've been invited to leave, right, in Oak Lawn.
That's right, and not the kids in the fist fights,
no.
The parents. And for some reason, these places do appear to have some clashes here and there. If you look on YouTube, you can see parents fighting in Wisconsin, Ohio, and Connecticut at Chuck E. Cheese's.
It is funny because, look, it is stressful. It's a stressful place for a lot of parents. Your kids are running around, yelling and screaming. There's mm-hmm. so much noise. It's kind of dark. Then these animals start singing to you, and they sell beer. I think maybe if they stop selling the liquor, it might be a better fit.
Now, the company says they get 65 million visits a year, and very few of them break out into fist fights. But the alderman, Howard Brookins, for the ward says, well, I hear what the neighbors are saying, but as long as it's not a strip club or a payday loan, I might be open to listening to the discussion about it. So he's not completely against it, but he does acknowledge that the neighbors are afraid of these places.
Andrew Herman, you can read more at dnainfo.com/Chicago. Thanks for coming by.
All right.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Clouds increasing a little bit ahead of maybe a shower or storm this afternoon. But, wait a minute, only sunshine on the telephone. Suzanne Mewson is here.
Hey, what happened to my Wonder Woman intro?
That was one week, okay? You don't get that every
one
week.
Off?
No, that was a one-off Wonder Woman, right. You don't see me getting the Flash every week. Well, sometimes I do get the Flash in the Showcase studio. So Suzanne Mewson is the co-host of The Big Payoff. You can listen to that on WGNradio.com and on iTunes and all over the place. And she joins us to talk about, I don't know, how do you describe what you talk about? Is it gender issues in the workplace, or we kind of go all over the place?
We typically ground ourselves, Steve, in topics that are important to women and women in business in particular. And you tend to play the side of the guy. I give
not
you
always.
That role.
Yeah.
And I tend to play the side of the very intelligent, grounded professional.
All right. And so every week you tend to pick three or four different topics to address, and then I follow you like a sheep and do whatever you want.
Exactly. Sheep to slaughter. Right.
And one of the things you chose this week had to do with the attire of the golfers at the U.S. Open. And it's a pretty interesting thing. I read the piece in the New York Times about it. And, pink is in.
It's not just pink, Steve. They've named it Millennial Pink. Like, really, they gave that type of pink a name. And you did see it. I mean, I don't know if you were watching the U.S. Open, but it was everywhere, right? On pants, on the shirts, by Nike, by, Ralph Lauren. I mean, it wasn't just one guy trying to make a statement. So the really interesting question that the article was raising, and I've now seen on a lot of websites because, Catherine of, Duchess of Cambridge was wearing it last week, is a statement being made? Is this part of the conversation, Steve, you and I have had before about, are we in a moment where gender really is transitioning and this is a part of that?
I have, for Father's Day, I received a summer sweater, a rose-colored summer sweater.
I bet that looked good on you. You can pull off pink.
Yeah, pretty much any color, but rose especially. And Earlier this summer, I bought a plain old flat pink cotton sweater. After I read this piece and started thinking of it, I bet from rose to pink, I bet I have four or five different shirts.
Now, why do you think that is? I mean, because some of them you're buying, and it sounds like some of them are things people are buying for you. Because this article raised an interesting question. It said, perhaps pink is a state of mind or an idea as opposed to just a shade.
Yeah, I don't think that's true. It'd be nice if it was, I guess, but I think, you know, Pantene or whomever, they picked the hot colors of the year. Pantone, is it? Okay.
Pantene is the hair, the shampoo.
It has
it's
to do
good.
With grooming. It's all
it's so all good.
But, you know, someone decided that was going to be the color they pushed, and over the past few years, it's gained. Now, so I don't think that people who are wearing pink are necessarily making a statement. I think it's a great color, for one thing.
I totally disagree.
You don't think it's a great color?
No, I do, but I actually think that the color itself is at the intersection of a population of people, the younger rising generation, who is, with their choices, particularly their consumer choices, really pushing back on traditional gender norms. And even if it's not conscious, the fact that at the U.S. Open, which is a really traditional guys event, you know, doesn't get more American than that, these guys were out there wearing pink, I think is not just about, oh, I like that color.
Okay, here's the genesis of it, I think. I think that when professional sports leagues like Major League Baseball or the NFL started having their sort of pink week for breast cancer awareness.
Mother's Day or breast cancer, yeah.
I think that introduced it in for, you know, I grew up in the 70s and early 80s, but mostly in the 70s when, you know, other boys would go to boys, oh, you're wearing pink, and what are you, a girl?
Right.
I mean, that's when it was associated.
Right.
So I think with the baseball players and football players and whoever else wearing that color, I think that sort of opened the door. And, I'm looking out the window now. There are six guys in front of me, and three of them are wearing a shade of rose or pink.
This is so, look, it can be actually a little bit of both. I don't want to suggest that the men who were wearing it at the U.S. Open were actively trying to make a political statement. I'm just saying, I think the emergence of it into the culture, to your point, just looking out the window, the average guy on the street wearing it is symbolic of the moment we're in. I don't think it's about the individuals making a point, though.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's.
Yeah.
Certainly, I'm not trying to make a political point when I put on one of my many pink shirts.
But it would be jarring to you.
But it does get comments. It does get comments. People say, "Oh, you're wearing a pink sweater."
Are they still? Because I was going to say, I would imagine it would be jarring if somebody said that to you, but then took it to the next level, like said it in a way that tried to demean you in some way, like, oh, you're wearing pink, you must not be a, you know, masculine man.
Well,
I think we're at the moment where that's actually not acceptable.
I would answer by saying I am and I'm not. So thank you very much. Speaking of clothes, let's just jump then to Breitbart News. This fascinates me that they did a whole piece on Melania Trump's wardrobe for her Camp David visit or something like that?
For her whole summer wardrobe, her summer ensemble, if you will.
And so the idea is that, wait a minute, this is the 21st century. We should be treating the First Lady in a very different way. She likely has issues that she wants to talk about. But instead, they knew all about what she was wearing. Not only that, but how much everything cost.
I really, and again, you know, if this weren't Breitbart, where to some extent you'd think, don't they have the president's ear or, you know, Steve Bannon's ear? Isn't there some connection here where they wouldn't do something inflammatory on purpose? That's my, you know, sort of cynical side. Says to me, this is not the article that's helpful about Melania Trump. It's not the article that's helpful about any first lady, but in particular one where people do want to see her more. We do want to see what she has inside her. She has suggested there are issues she cares about. And if this is the box we're going to put her in and keep her there, that doesn't bode well, not just for Melania Trump, but the whole role of First Lady.
It kind of struck me as a Jackie Kennedy feature.
I agree. I totally agree. And that's what made me wonder, Steve. So is this a bigger message? You know, are they trying? Because if you remember, Melania, at the inauguration were something very, you know, Jackie Kennedy-esque. Is there a subtle or not so subtle message here that the values of this administration really are about returning to the more traditional roles of women?
Or go back to pink. She can do both. I mean, she can champion issues and things like that and still dress incredible. And she's beautiful. And I know nothing about fashion. I love what she wears.
I do, too. I wish it were a both and. It would have made my heart sing if they would have said, you
it
know,
was kind of odd.
It was just bizarre.
They were talking about her purse that, you know, and how much her purse cost.
And Manolo Blahnik shoes. And again, to your point, she is very beautiful. It would be the obvious thing to focus on her as this kind of two-dimensional character. But don't we want to actually see, and, you know, look, she doesn't need to be Michelle Obama. She doesn't need to be someone who's going to be out there always with the perfect message on point. But we do need to hear something more from her than what she chose to, you know, carry as a purse.
Suzanne Muchen, check out her podcast, The Big Payoff, at WGNradio.com, iTunes, and all those spots. Nice to talk to you, Suzanne.
Great to talk to you, Steve.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGNR. All right, let's jump right into this. We've got limited time. Elizabeth Irvin is on the phone line. She's a transportation planner at Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, CMAP, as it is known. Elizabeth, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. I'm very excited about this. And it's kind of funny. I was never that interested in being a futurist or the future sort of in this way until I started doing the show and started learning about technology and all of the innovation that's happening. And so here CMAP is working on sort of an idea of where we'll be in the year 2050. You're in a period where you're looking for public input to all of this, and you're focusing on transportation. Now, it seems to me, in my mind, and this is based on no knowledge whatsoever, I think of congestion getting less and less rather than more and more. I feel like we've gone through that phase of increasing congestion, and I feel like we're just going to be a little more spread out in the future. Am I right or wrong about that?
Well, I think what's so exciting about looking at the future is that there are technologies out there today that have the potential to really reduce congestion, to increase safety, and really improve transportation across the board. But we need to make the right decisions today and plan ahead for the future. You know, things like automated cars could really benefit a lot of folks. And we need to think about the land use patterns that they might create.
You know, I think, and before being actually interested in this, I just kind of assumed all this stuff just happened. Like, you know, we will gradually move toward this and this and this rather than actually planning for it and thinking about it. But that's what you guys are doing, right? And one of the things you need to figure out is just how roads are going to be built, right? Or how roads are going to be shared, whether it's with delivery vehicles or automated vehicles, bicycles and things like that.
Right. So CMAP, the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, we are a regional planning agency. We cover the city of Chicago and the surrounding seven-county region. And we're really thinking about what kinds of investments do we need to make in our transportation system as we look out into the future and how travel patterns change and exactly looking at, you know, how freight moves around the region and how bicyclists and pedestrians share the road with cars and trucks.
What do you think will be the biggest difference from now to, say, 35, 40, 50 years from now?
I think it's going to be really interesting to see how these technologies that are just emerging now, you know, everyone's really excited about automated vehicles. And the question of are those things, you know, can you own your own automated vehicle? And hop in it in the morning and set it to head to your work and kick back and enjoy a newspaper on your way? Or is it actually a shared fleet? Is it more like the Ubers and Lyfts of today where you maybe share a ride with folks? Or, you know, are transit vehicles actually automated?
Or like,
and all those things have, yes.
I was going to say, almost like Divvy bikes. It's not yours, but there's always one there if you want it. And so and
exactly.
If you're a real estate developer, this could be great news, right? Because all this downtown property that goes toward parking lots now might actually be freed up for more development.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a real potential in this future. It could really change how and where people choose to live and how they choose to get around. And so thinking ahead, you know, as we're planning new buildings, as we're planning parking garages, thinking about, you know, how do we sort of plan for a future where things might change? And so that's why we're really trying to reach out to folks and get their input on our plan. So
I know,
this is our plan on to 2050. Yeah.
I've been following the Hyperloop people and all of that as well in mm-hmm. high speed. So do you foresee maybe in 50 years or 35 years that we might have a workforce who lives in Peoria and comes downtown to Chicago every day for work? Is that a possibility?
That's part of this. So we're, as part of these alternative futures, we're calling them, we're looking at a few different futures. And in this one, innovative transportation, that is one of the impacts we're looking at, that if as people, as it's easier to travel longer distances, people could live further and further away from work. And that might mean that we need to build more infrastructure, build more roads, and we have to deal with the challenge of how would we fund that,
right,
considering our challenges funding our system the way it is.
Right. And so it's easy to talk about the future as a sci-fi world. This is a business show.
Mm-hmm.
So the point of it really is that, look, if you're in government or business, you need to be looking ahead to that now. You need to be preparing for that now, because no matter what it is, it's going to be dramatic and the change is coming.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely. And that's why we're trying to look at these few, several different futures to try to get a sense of what strategies can help us respond, get us prepared for these futures, no matter what happens, to make sure that we have a region that provides an enviable quality of life for all of our residents.
It's exciting.
And so we.
Elizabeth Irvin, a transportation planner at CMAP. Elizabeth, how do people get more information or get involved in this?
Absolutely. We would love to get people's feedback. There's a number of ways to get more information and to give us your thoughts. We would really love it if you went to our website, which is cmap.illinois.gov. You can take some online surveys. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We also have kiosks that are located throughout the region where you can provide your feedback and attend workshops with some of our staff members. And we have a really exciting event coming up this Thursday, June 22nd at 9 a.m. at Illinois Institute of Technology, where we have some experts on transportation technologies who are going to come and talk about what they think is going to happen in the future and how we should respond to it.
Excellent. Thanks very much.
Thank you.